Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we talk with a couple of guests from UW Extension. One of them, Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for Dane County. Lisa, welcome back. Appreciate having you with us, and appreciate as well Amy Freidig, the program assistant in the Master Gardener program at UW Extension. And Amy, great to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me here today, Larry. And I should mention, just in case you introduced me as a wonderful former self, I now am a statewide horticulture outreach specialist for the horticulture program, but I do have that experience with the Master Gardener program. So happy to talk about that too.
All right. I'm really glad to have you with us. Actually, glad to have both of you with us as we talk about Master Gardener classes. There are some great new series of classes coming up starting this fall. And so we'll talk about that. But of course, we'll also answer your other gardening questions as we move along the show. So you can join in. How's your garden doing this year? What do you want to know about Master Gardener classes? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Amy, I know you're really familiar with the Master Gardener classes, and I wanted to start with that. But first, tell us a little more about your background. You said you have a new title as well.
Yeah. I do. So I have been involved in horticulture for, I've done all my studies in it. And I like to tell people that because the only thing I know anything about is beets, because I was very lucky to be able to research table beets for my graduate work. And I've been with Extension since 2013. And a large part of that was working with the Master Gardener, the Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener program. And now I work statewide, and I have the privilege of developing a lot of educational content for Wisconsin Extension Master Gardeners and the general public. And part of my job is moderating this Growing and Caring for Plants in Wisconsin Foundations in Gardening course.
It's, you know, it sounds pretty exciting. Tell us more about the Foundations in Gardening course that are being offered this fall.
Sure. So this is one of the things that I love the most about this course is that it's designed with busy adults, busy gardening, garden-loving, plant-loving adults in mind. It's an online course that you can complete at your own pace. And it's an introductory and comprehensive course. So you're going to be learning key concepts for selecting, growing, and maintaining plants in Wisconsin. And the thing that I really like about it, too, is that it teaches you to kind of think about gardening. You're going to learn about foundational pieces of the garden, soils, botany, integrated pest management are a couple really important and cool things. So you're going to learn how to link your general gardening practices to the biology behind it, to some of the science behind it, so you can plan for and have greater success in your garden.
And so it's a series of online classes. How many are there?
So it's complete at your own pace. So I believe there are 13 modules.
Okay.
And we have a course window. So you can start the official dates of the moderated course window. And moderated means that I, as course moderator, will be there to help you with anything you need, technical difficulties, questions about course content, etc. So that moderated course window happens September 10th through December 9th. And during that time, we give you a calendar and you can to help you guide you through, and you can complete all 13 modules during that course window. And each module focuses on a gardening topic. So it's going to start really foundational. Soils, botany, those things I mentioned, general gardening practices. And then we get more specific. We'll also talk about different categories of kind of garden creatures, insects, we'll talk about plant diseases, and then we'll end kind of the final third is focusing on different categories of plants like trees, growing woody plants, herbaceous ornamentals, vegetables, and fruits. So you will go through those during that time. And at the end of that, if you've completed the course by a certain date, you can receive a course completion certificate and earn 4 CEUs. This is a non-credit course, but you can get a certificate of completion from UW-Madison. And another really neat thing is if you're thinking, oh boy, you know, I'm not sure I can finish it in that amount of time. I've got a really busy fall. That's okay, because you get access to the course, which is complete at your own pace, through August 31st of 2024. So you have access
to
the material.
Got a whole year.
Yeah, you've got a whole year to learn. You know, next year, something happens in the garden and you think, oh my gosh, I learned something about it. I know I learned something. You can go back. You can reference the materials.
And so I know there's a workbook which is online, but you can also get a print copy, which is what I'd want, to be perfectly honest.
Me too. Yes, if you register for the course, everyone who registers receives an online PDF of the course manual, but for $33 you can receive a beautiful hard copy of it. I like to highly recommend that to people because it's a great reference and it's nicer to read. You know, you can recline wherever you wish and read your manual, because in each module, when I say you're going at your own pace, you're going to have readings, videos to watch. There's some online activities that you click through, and there's a quiz. There's extra resources, all kinds of that stuff that you can do on your own in your own time. So if you're a 2 a.m. kind of studier, you can do it then. But and one cool thing, Larry, that I want to tell you about that I'm really excited about is the only thing that, you know, you have to, or you have the option of being live, you know, be here at this time kind of thing, is our Q&A with the experts webinars. So these are Zoom webinars that we have during the moderated course window. Mm-hmm. Starting in October. So you get to come to these webinars online that are at a set time and ask questions and learn from our UWS experts. So that's kind of a wonderful, unique opportunity for our course participants to get the direct answer to that burning question you've always had. I love it. I learn something new every time. The questions change. Things are timely. It's really fun. And they also give special little mini presentations for this course specifically during that time. And the webinars are recorded if you can't make it.
And along with that, there are some, I guess, optional labs that are online too, right?
Yep, for sure. You can... like the hard copy of the manual, you can also opt to add on the online labs, and those take place during the moderated course window. So if you want to dig a little deeper, you want to have some applied learning. Again, it's online, so I'm not saying applied like you're going to go and be digging around in your garden soil type of applied, but you're going to be thinking through and practicing some of the important skills that are going to help you have more success in the garden, things related to your soil, to looking up information. I think that's a really critical part of being a successful gardener, is understanding how to find the best information so that you know what to plant, you know how to take care of it. And when things go wrong, you can start finding solutions to manage it.
Well, I know there's a cost associated with this. It's probably two or three different costs, depending on. I know there's what you're calling an early bird registration, which is going to save you a few bucks.
Yes. And we are in the early bird registration window right now. So through August 14th, the course is $299. Again, that includes access through August 31st of 2024 and the electronic PDF copy of the manual. And from August 15th to the 31st. That's the regular registration window where the course fee will go up to $325. So register before August 14th. And I do want to mention that we do have a limited number of need-based scholarships available, and all that information is on our website, and it's a really short application.
Yeah, well, you could save yourself $26, which you could apply to the hardcover manual of $33. So there you go. I would get, and the open labs that are in addition, you don't have to do those labs. So they sound really good. Are four of them, and they're $40, so just $10 a time.
And those are highly flexible too to fit your busy schedule. They're also recorded if there's a week you can't make it.
And where do we go for signing up for this?
You can go to the Wisconsin Horticulture website if you want. We have a course website there also with FAQs. And I know that in the notes, this will be listed more specifically, but our Wisconsin Horticulture website is hort.extension.wisc.edu. And you can look under upcoming programs and you'll see it there. It's the second one down, Growing and Caring for Plants in Wisconsin Foundations and Gardening. A nice long title for you to not forget, right?
Well, we'll have that posted. I think Clara Neipert's probably already got it up on our page. So
great.
Ideas at wpr.org/Larry. Go to today's date and you'll find that in the notes section or just below the topic. So, well, that's a good introduction. We'll get you, through the course of the show, maybe we'll get you back to keep plugging and talking a bit more about the course as we move along. But we'll take some questions from folks, and we'll do that right after I remind you our two guests are Amy Friday, who we've been talking with, the program assistant and the Master Gardeners program at UW Extension, and Lisa Johnson, who's, of course, a horticulture educator for Dane County. She's been with us many, many times. Tyler Ditter's our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and Clara Neipert, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Lisa Johnson and Amy Friday. Again, we've been talking primarily with Amy here about the Master Gardener program at UW Extension. And as I was talking with her, I was thinking, well, am I a Master Gardener once I complete this course? But I don't think that's the case. But it lays the foundation, does it not, for that?
That's right, Larry. It is to become a Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener, it's a two-part process. And this is the first part, which is taking an approved learning opportunity so you can learn about gardening and horticulture. And the second step you can find out more information about the second step, which is taking the Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener Program onboarding course on their website.
All right.
Which is, yeah. But I do want to mention, this is super important for everyone listening. Foundations and Gardening is open to anyone who wants to, not just people, prospective Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener volunteers, open to anyone who wants to learn more about gardening.
That makes very, very good sense. Well, I'm glad to have that cleared up, and we'll talk some more about the garden. I'm sure people may have questions about the Foundations course as we move along, or just the Master Gardeners in general. But let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. You might have a plant question, and we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Chris in Black Creek. Chris, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Hi, Amy and Lisa. Yeah, I'm turning into the biggest rabbit in my garden. In fact, my front teeth are even growing longer. I Googled beet. I'm glad you mentioned, Amy, about beets, because that's why I called. I Googled beets, and when I trim them down in there a little bit just to give the plant a jump, I thought, wow, the stem and the beet leaf. And sure enough, they're really edible, and I threw them in my salad, and you can steam them like spinach too. But my question is, Now that my front teeth are growing longer, do I have to file those down once in a while? Thanks, Larry.
Oh, man. Chris, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. And so, in fact, you know, Amy, you're probably, I'm sure you've eaten beet tops, or have you?
Oh, of course, Larry. I hope this whole rest of the program is going to be about talking about ways to eat beets, right? Now, my current favorite, I will say, I want to put a plug in for eating a raw beet like a carrot. So you take the raw beet and you peel it and you slice it up really thin. It's kind of, and it's got that carrot crunch and a very unique flavor. So listeners, everyone, give it a whirl this weekend. You won't regret it.
I like beets grilled. That's kind of my Ooh. Favorite way to have beets. And who was your professor, by the way?
Was it Dr. Irwin Goldman? Yeah.
Yep.
It's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, appreciate those comments. Let's go to Nora and Wanakee, and we'll probably get Lisa in here pretty quick here. Nora, hi.
Hi, Larry. How long does it take for my carrots to grow and be ready to pick?
Ah, well, Nora, that is a very good question. A young listener, a young
yes,
gardener.
Yes, young gardener. That's great. Love to get kids in the garden young. Well, you can plant your carrot seeds in the spring, and depending on the type of carrot, they can be ready to eat in the mid to late summer. Or you can plant your carrots probably in August, and then they'll be ready to eat in, say, October sometime. So it usually takes a couple of months at least for them to become good-sized.
And be sure, Nora, that you kind of, once they're all growing, my carrots always, I would always have too many carrots in a mm-hmm. row. So I would get rid, I would pull out like every other one, or sometimes I'd have to pull a couple in a row just to get the right distance.
Yeah, those seeds are very, very tiny, and it's really easy when you're seeding carrots to have them all come out in a big lump, and then you have millions of itty-bitty, teeny-weeny little carrots trying to grow in the same space. So it's really important to thin them out so that they have enough space to grow. Otherwise, you get a whole bunch of little, like, pencil-thin carrots. So
you could eat those, couldn't you?
Well, you could. They're just not going to be very tasty. So it's nice to let them have enough room to expand and develop their sugars and good yeah. color and everything. So
yeah.
It's not fun thinning and, you know, pulling out seedlings, but it's something you need to do.
Yeah, something you need to do, Nora. Well, I love to hear from young gardeners, and I thank you very much for calling today. Appreciate it very much. Well, let's try Janet in Marshfield. Janet, hi.
Hi, this is Janet. I have a question. I have three tomato plants. They're all growing wonderful, but one of them has big yellow leaves all around on the bottom. Mm. No spots like it's got fungus or anything, just bright yellow leaves.
All right.
Okay. Are these in the ground or are they in pots?
They are in pots.
They are in pots. Okay. And is the one, and I assume they're all in the same kind of soil and they're all pretty much in the same area and you're watering them all the same?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me what variety it is?
I think it's a beefsteak.
Okay. So it's a larger size tomato. Does that one have a thicker canopy of leaves than the other ones do?
No, they're all about the same.
Okay. What I'm thinking it is if it's the lower leaves and there aren't any spots, is that maybe they're getting shaded out. The other possibility is that sometimes with nutritional deficiencies, you sometimes are either going to see it, depending on what the nutrient is, you might see it in the upper leaves or you might see it in the lower leaves. So it's possibly a nutrient problem. Sometimes with the beefsteak tomatoes, they need a little more in the nutrient department than, say, a cherry tomato or a smaller slicing tomato. So what kind of fertilizer program are you using?
Janet is hesitating here. Maybe no fertilizer after you put them in the pot?
I think fertilizer. I just don't know. It's a miracle.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So you're doing that like once a month or twice a month?
Twice a month.
Twice a month. Okay. So, all right. If you're doing that twice a month, then it probably is not nutrient related. So my guess would be that they're just being shaded out down there. And again, that can happen with tomatoes. If you don't have any tomato leaf spots at this time of year, give yourself a gold star.
Yeah.
Because usually tomatoes are kind of like the poster child for disease. But usually you're not going to just see yellow leaves. The other thing that can cause yellow leaves is overwatering, but I doubt that's your issue since it's in a pot and you're watering them all the same.
So would Janet be better off to just knock those leaves off and get rid of them? I would.
I would thin out the canopy a little bit, take out the ones that are yellow, and make sure that there isn't any kind of disease on them. I mean, there could be something like powdery mildew that you're just not able to see very well. But if they're just a solid yellow, my guess is it isn't something like spider mites be rare to have it just on the lower leaves too. So that's my guess at what might be going on there.
There you go, Janet. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Kyle in Fox Point. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, it's Kylie.
Oh, sorry, Kylie. Oh,
no worries at all. If I spelled it, it would be even worse. I took the Green Thumb gardening class this past fall, which was wonderful. And I'm wondering, I'm interested in master gardening just in general. And I'm wondering if I should sign up for the course that you mentioned, the Green Thumb, the master gardening
foundations
course.
And gardening.
Yeah, foundation,
right.
Yeah.
So is it going to be vastly different?
Okay, let's turn to Amy for that. Amy?
Hi, Kylie. What I would have you do is reach out to the program coordinators at the Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener Program. And Lisa can jump in. I believe if you took it in 2022, right? It was an approved learning opportunity. So that if you took an approved learning opportunity, that would be completing the first step of a two-step process. And so you would not need to retake the material in foundations and gardening because you would have already completed that. So if you want the most up-to-date information, I would check out the Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener Program website, and there is an email address there that you can reach out with your specific questions.
And anything to add to that, Lisa?
Yeah. I did not teach a full approved learning opportunity last year. I'm guessing that, Kylie, you probably might have taken either my fall series or my spring series or maybe the winter vegetables series, but it wasn't the full set of classes in 2022 that would have qualified for a learning opportunity, so you would need to take foundations for that.
Yeah. All right. Kylie, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Christy in Chippewa Falls, on to you. Hi, Christy.
Christy, are you there?
We'll put her back on hold, and let's try Kel in Sugar Camp. Hi, Kel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if there are any named varieties of beets that are grown just for their tops, like turnip greens are grown for their tops, not the turnip. I was wondering if there's any named seed varieties you could mention that you could look for just to grow the greens, because the beet greens are fabulous.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Amy, if you were going to, looks like you were going to chime in there.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been out of the beet game for a few years, and so I don't know, for example, what varieties, maybe Lisa does, that are currently grown specifically for beet tops, you know, like the baby beet greens that you would find in a salad mix, for example. But, you know, the variety may matter less than when you harvest them. So if you want those really sweet, tiny leaves like you're going to see in a typical salad blend, you're going to want to harvest them earlier. But you can also harvest them later when they're bigger, you know, to, for example, some people will chop them up and saute them. So the sky's the limit. There are some beautiful ones out there that you can use for color. Bull's Blood is a lovely variety that has deep purple foliage that you could try for fun. But a lot of the hybrid beets have lovely, lovely tops. But Lisa, do you know any specifically cultivars specific for leaf production?
You know, we had some at the office this year that were specifically for the greens, but I can't remember what the cultivar was. But boy, you're right, there are a lot of varieties out there. I like some of the ones that have the white and red striping on the inside.
Yeah, those
and, Kyoja.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Kyoja.
Yeah, and then there's the golden beets. Those are really kind of nice too. And there are some baby beet cultivars that just are nice and sweet and tender as well. But unfortunately, I can't remember what the name of that beet green variety was, but I'm sure if you use the wonderful internet resource that you can probably find one.
Yeah. What's the beet that the UW has developed?
Well, there are a number. Are you talking about the lower geosmin, the lower earthy flavor beet?
There was a new beet that came out this that had a stripe. The beet itself was kind of striped.
Oh my!
Badger Flame. I believe that's it. Is coming to mind.
Badger Flame, and that was Irwin's worked on that for Irwin Goldman worked on that for quite a number of years. But it's a beautiful beet. Oh my goodness me. Badger Flame. I wonder what the leaves are like for that one. I know the beet sure looks good.
Yeah.
Kel, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Martin in Duluth, Minnesota. Martin, hi.
Hi. Listen, thanks for taking my call. I want to put a root cellar in my cabin, but near my cabin, but I'm limited with space, so I'm thinking I'll just have the garbage can in the ground and cover it up, insulated on top, and I was thinking about trying that and see how that works for storing root vegetables, and I thought about making it extra deep so I can utilize the bottom part extra deep so I can. I can reinforce that because the garbage cans aren't that big. They're only 4 or 5 feet. And I can might be able to utilize some of the ground temperature a little bit better. And now my wife thinks I'm a little crazy, but I know you guys don't.
It's an interesting idea. The thing I would be worried about is lack of air circulation, especially if you're piling a lot of things on top of each other. That's one thing that root cellars are really important for. A lot of people will have their vegetables on like screened shelves so that there's good air circulation. Now, there are certainly some things that you can, like I've seen onions and some potatoes put in, you know, like the small milk crates, but you don't want to pile a whole lot of things on top of each other without having good air circulation, especially because if you have one thing that goes in there that has a spot or some problem, you can end up with some issues. You know, there's I'm trying to remember the name of the resource. I went to a training a number of years ago, and there was a woman who had a lot of interesting information about how different vegetables should be stored. And actually, during my Green Thumb gardening course for the winter vegetable series that I run in January, I did have a lecture on storing vegetables. And it has, you know, it's important, like you have different regimes. There's cold and moist, there's cool and moist, then there's cool and dry and cold and dry. So it's important to get the like right humidity because some vegetables really need more humidity and a different temperature range to store them long term. Now, if you're just keeping them in your refrigerator, you know, for a week or so or 2 weeks, that's not a problem. But if you're trying to store them for, you know, 3 months or something like that, it's important to get that. I believe we do have a publication at the Learning Store that's on storing vegetables properly. Yeah. So I would check that out. Maybe what you want to do is get some, you know, do more than one of your garbage can idea, or maybe do some smaller, more shallow garbage cans and make sure that the tops are on tight, because I can imagine raccoons and skunks and all kinds of other things going after that that kind of thing. But it's an interesting idea. I haven't heard anybody talk about that before. Amy, have you heard about that?
No, but I honestly was to take us off topic delightfully, talking about the raccoons in the trash can. I am going to share the story that many people probably have. My husband had forayed into feeding the birds with a big, lovely trash can full of black oil sunflower seeds that the industrious raccoons were able to pry the top off of in the middle of the night, clang, 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 and feast upon the contents of the trash can. So yes, that is also a really good caution. But no, I do not have a lot of experience with anything related to root cellars or long-term storage.
My mom had a woodchuck do the same thing that your raccoon did.
You know, I believe anything anyone says of woodchucks. I believe that they would drive my car. So,
if given the opportunity.
Martin, there you go. You might want to take a look.
Check out that publication.
Yeah.
On storing vegetables. I think if you just go to the UW Learning Store site, or you might be able to find it on the Wisconsin Horticulture site, and just type in storing vegetables.
Be worth a look for sure.
Box. Yeah.
Christy in Chippewa County, we'll go to you now. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Great, thank you. So looking for species of trees to plant. I'm familiar with the Doug Tellamy idea of planting natives to support the insects and whatnot. Was leaning towards a white oak, but got to thinking with changing climate, hotter, drier, what about looking at species from, say, native to southern Ohio, Indiana? I was at a presentation several years ago where the presenter had maps and species list, but I lost that source. Do you have a recommendation on where to get suggestions? Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure that at quite at this point that I'd be sourcing things from southern sites at this point in time. I do think white oak is a great choice.
I do,
and
too.
I understand your concern about climate change. What's forecast to happen is that trees like, for example, paper bark birch that are marginally hardy down here in the southern part of Wisconsin, as the southern part of Wisconsin gets too hot, will not be able to grow down here. And so I understand your idea of having more southern species, but I think at this time I would stick with what is native here in Wisconsin. I guess I wouldn't go for paper birch, but
no, but white oaks are go right straight south. You can go all. I mean,
it's got a huge range.
Not much west of the Midwest, but the east and south, you can go pretty much anywhere in the state, in the country, and you're going to find white oaks.
Yeah, I would, though, caution to get your seed source or get your actual plant from a northern supplier.
Yes.
There's a phenomenon called provenance where plants that have a big range, like, for example, redbud, it has a range from Canada down to Texas over to Florida. However, there are ecotypes within that range. And if you took a leaf from a plant growing up here and a leaf from a plant growing in Texas, it would look rather different. The one that's in Texas is more adapted to heat and drought, and the one up here would be adapted to cold winters. So if you tried to grow a southern sourced redbud up here, it would not be able to survive the winter. But yeah, Doug Tallamy has written some amazing, amazing books. You should definitely, if you've never read Bringing Nature Home, I highly recommend that one. And yeah, oaks of all kinds. I'm actually involved here in Dane County with a program called the Heritage Oaks program. And you can look that up on the internet as well. We're trying to preserve genetics from trees that have been around since before settlement. We're trying to relocate those trees and remeasure them, see how they're doing, take ones off the list that have succumbed over time, and find new ones. So it's a really interesting idea, and I think we could widen that to other champion trees. I know you've had Bruce Allison on a number of times, and he's written a book about champion trees. And, you know, those trees that have survived this long, it's important to preserve those genetics going forward, because those guys are survivors.
Yeah, they are indeed. Christy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guests today from UW Extension and Horticulture, Lisa Johnson and Amy Freidig. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests from UW Extension, Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator, Amy Freidig, who is she's got lots of topics, but titles. But one of the things that she does really well is that she is a program assistant in the Master Gardener program at UW Extension. So we've been talking about the Master Gardener program, but of course also answering your other questions relating to your own plants. So give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Amy spent some time talking with us about
Foundations in Gardening.
Foundations in Gardening. I couldn't remember the exact title. Sorry for that, but we'll talk some more about that as the show goes on as well. Roger in Grantsburg, though, will give you a chance. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling about my apple trees that just got apples finally. The trees that never bear fruit. I've been for years here trying to get them. My one, the one tree, there's got to be about 200 apples on it. Good. It just went nuts. The other ones are kind of straggly. The one looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree, and it's just, there ain't much there, but there's apples on it. What can I put for fertilizer or stakes, or when is the time to do that?
So...
yeah, so I'm glad to hear that your apples are finally bearing. Sometimes it does take a long time for that to occur, especially with standard trees, can take from 5 to 7 years or maybe even longer. I don't know where you would be in the state this year that you haven't experienced drought. The whole lower half of the state is in... I forget whether extreme or severe is the worst category, but Dane County and a couple areas west were in the most severe category. Bottom half of the state was severe. Top half of the state is moderate. So that tells me that we should not be stressing the trees with a lot of fertilizer. I would put fertilizer on in the spring when you do it, and we've got a really great publication that you can find at the Learning Store called Growing Apples in Wisconsin, and it has specific information about how much nitrogen to apply per caliper inch of the tree's trunk. And you measure that at about 4.5 feet up, and it will tell you how much of a particular concentration of product to use. I would keep them watered right now. That's the most important thing. And I've been telling people that for their big established trees as well. A lot of the big trees are not even going to show damage necessarily this year, but then next year you might see dieback and so on. And we definitely don't want that happening to your apple trees. So please make sure you're giving them 1 to 2 inches of water a week. If that is hard to figure out, and I understand why that might be, you might also try a minimum of 5 gallons of water per caliper inch. That's a good minimum. The Arbor Day Foundation actually recommends 10, but our parks department here says a minimum of 5 gallons per caliper inch is
appropriate.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Roger, good luck. Thank you. Ellen in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, good morning. I'm new to pot gardening, new to vegetable gardening, really. And I'm concerned about, I'm hearing that next week we're going to have very, very hot conditions.
90
plus. And I'm wondering, I'm not looking forward to that.
No.
But I'm wondering how I can best protect those pots that are right out on a hot porch. Do I do anything besides really, really water? Do I cover them with anything?
First of all, tell me what size pots you're growing and what crops you're growing.
Mostly tomatoes,
okay.
One eggplant, one zucchini. And the pots are probably not as big as they should be. Probably 10 inches deep.
7 to 10 inches deep? And
no, 10 to 12 inches deep. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any bigger pots around by chance, or maybe some like 5 gallon buckets?
Yes, I do. I just put holes in them, but I just thought, well, there's tomatoes and vegetables on these already. So do I really want to transplant them now?
Yeah.
No.
Boy, that's kind of the rock and the hard place scenario.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be moving them.
Yeah, that's going to be really tough on them, though, this week. Usually, you don't want to grow a tomato plant in a container any smaller than a 5 gallon bucket. So unless it's one of these hanging, like tumbling Tom tomatoes.
No.
It's like a beefsteak or a slicing or something?
No, mostly cherry tomatoes and maybe a few.
Okay, those
other kinds that I don't know.
Those guys get pretty darn big. So even though it's not ideal, I guess I would carefully transplant those. I'm just worried that you're not going to be able to keep up with the watering this week unless you work at home.
Yeah.
Or if you're at home and you can check a couple times a day, then leave it until this, you know, hot spell is over. But kudos to you if you've been keeping up with it during this drought. But if you're telling me, and I've got a picture in my head, which may not be reality, but the picture I have in my head is like a 10 inch wide by 10 inch deep pot for your tomatoes.
Or maybe 10 to 12. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. That's going to be hard for that plant to make it the rest of the summer. So
12 would be better.
Yeah.
It's actually 12 is quite a bit different.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But still, it's not.
Yeah. It's not ideal. So, if you do have some 5 gallon buckets or bigger pots, I would transplant those as soon as possible.
Might not be a bad time to have them in shade.
yeah, maybe that's actually not a bad idea. If you can transplant them, put them in shade for a week or so to help with transplant shock. How tall are these plants?
They're getting pretty big. 20 inches, maybe.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay, we're still good then. Mine are about 4 feet right now, so that would be really hard to deal with. But 20 inches, I think you can still do that. Now the zucchini should be in about a 5 gallon pot minimum, so you could also use a 5 gallon bucket for that. And what was the other one? Eggplant?
An eggplant.
Yeah. And is that in the same size pot?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Is it a regular type eggplant or is it one of the dwarf types?
I think it's a dwarf.
Okay.
It's purple and white.
Yeah. You could keep that in there then. That would be fine. But definitely check once a day. And since these are all probably pretty pot bound, if you decide to wait until after this week to transplant, I would move them into a shadier area for this really hot period that's coming up, and definitely check them often.
There you go, Ellen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Donna emailed. She's looking for a small 30-foot or under tree for their yard. Preferably a native. Their soil is clay, leans toward alkaline. Any ideas on that?
Yeah. Did she say sun or shade?
She didn't say.
Okay. If it is partial shade, I'd go for a musselwood, which is a really wonderful edge of the woods / understory tree. It's got amazing bark that looks really sinewy. That's why they call it muscle wood, and usually gets really good fall color. There are some cultivars that are out there now. I guess we would call those nativars. Mike Yanni up in Menominee Falls area has bred some really nice cultivars, but the straight species is great as well. And it's also a host for, I believe, tiger swallowtail maybe, larva, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. So that's one. If it's shadier than, you know, if it's like a half a day of shade, you might want to try a pagoda dogwood. That's also another nice native. Now, that's going to get a lot wider than tall, probably only going to get to be about 15 feet or so. If it's, if it's full sun, trying to think of a small native that isn't for partial shade and not coming up with anything, I'd probably go the route of crabapple tree if that's...
That's the way to go,
yeah. That would be the case.
All right. Well, Amy, someone wants to know about eating raw beets. You said slice them up. do you put anything on them? You know, is there some sort of...
secret sauce.
Yeah, thing, or you just eat them raw?
That's this. I'm trying to start a revolution here. That's why, like the baby carrot, okay? We need the like, baby beet. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would.
You could go and buy a package of, like, teeny tiny little beets that you could just eat raw and pop in your mouth. Oh, that'd be wonderful. But, yeah, I just chop them up. You can make, like, nice little long, thin, delicate strips and just crunch them away like you would a carrot.
That's nice.
That's everyone's weekend goal.
I'm a pickled beet person myself.
Oh, yes. Oh, now this is, yes, we're going in the right direction here.
Lisa Johnson and Amy Friday from UW Extension, our guests today as we talk about the Master Gardener program and take a look at your questions. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with a couple of guests for you today. Lisa Johnson back with us. She's UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. And also joining in, Amy Friday. Amy's the Statewide Horticulture Outreach Specialist and is programming with the Master Gardener program at UW Extension as well. So, great to have both of them with us, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions as we move along. As a matter of fact, we have callers online with questions, so why don't we go back to the phones? Ann in Dane County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for this program. My question is going to be surrounding raspberries. I have two different varieties, different blooming at different times of the year in my garden, and I'm just curious. I've read over the past, little research that I've done, not to mow them down, you know, for the end of the season, but just keep them as is, which I've done. They're doing fine. I just want to make sure that I'm, you know, kind of doing right by them and looking for advice at the end of the season.
Sure. Are these growing together in the same place, or are they separated?
They're together, and I can't and don't really differentiate between the two. It's just
okay. Yeah, that's going to be a little difficult. So the raspberries that bloom in the spring and that are going to bear usually this time of year. July, August, those are a two-year cane plant. Those are our summer-bearing raspberries. Those should actually be cut down after they bear because they're not going to bear again next year, as opposed to what we sometimes call a fall-bearing raspberry that's going to bear usually in September or October. Early October, but, you know, later in the year. That's a one-year plant. And I'm sorry, I've got it backwards here. So, yes, the two-year plant, you should, after it has bloomed, you take out the ones that have bloomed because they're not going to bloom anymore. But the new one-year canes are going to be the ones you need to save over the winter so that next year they'll bloom. But the fall-bearing ones are a one-year plant, and after they have borne raspberries, they can be cut down. So it's going to be hard for you to differentiate which one is which. Now, if you find that you've got some that like bear in July and ones that bear a little bit later in August, you might still just have the summer bearing ones, but if there's like a big
break.
Yeah, break in time, then you probably do have some of the fall bearing and some of the summer bearing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a little hard. I mean, you definitely don't want to accidentally get rid of all your primacanes for next year. So I guess probably what you're doing is the thing to do, and then just cut out the ones that you can see that are dead over the winter. That happens a lot when people buy some of the summer yeah. bearing and some of the fall bearing, and they end up growing into each other. It's just hard to deal with that properly.
Yeah, and good luck. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, also, you might take a look at the growing raspberries in Wisconsin. That talks about both types of raspberries, and that's at the learning store.
You problem is they store. Look the same.
Yeah, they don't yeah. say, hey, I'm a fall bearing. Hey, I'm a summer
there's
bearing.
There's no difference on the leaves or anything.
Yeah, it's just when they bear.
Yeah. And good luck. Thank you for calling. Norman in Wausau, on to you. Hi, Norman.
Hi. Thanks for having your program. I got some interesting information I found out this spring. I used pine needles to mulch my blueberry patch, my caneberries, and they do fantastic. And last year, I planted a bunch of carrots, in fact, four different varieties. I made nice hills to put them in with sand and mulch and organic matter. And I don't think I planted four different varieties, and all and then I went down and bought some more because the first ones didn't seem to sprout after several weeks. So I went down and bought some fresh seed, and I had the same results. And I had covered them with pine needles to shade them until the seed sprouted. Over the winter, I was reading through some of my old garden books, and guess what? In one of the books, they said pine needles inhibit the sprouting of carrot seeds in particular.
Oh,
the other garden seeds.
Oh, that's sad.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Oh, that is a very interesting.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So pine needles and carrots, no.
No, not friends.
Oh, man. So, Norman, thanks a lot. When you mulch a garden, how much mulch do you put in? You know, let's get away from pine needles for a minute.
Sure. If we're talking like shredded bark mulch, you don't want any more than 3 inches. If it's around woody plants, you don't want it any deeper than that. And with woody plants or any plant, it should not be right up against the stem. So all the time, unfortunately, I see poor trees that are buried in mulch with the mulch pushed up against the trunk. We call that volcano mulching. And if you have that, yeah, it is, because it can, especially with trees like oaks that are very sensitive to that kind of thing, it can have a really bad effect on them. So if somebody does have that, please go and demulch.
Yeah.
Now, with annuals and perennials, I'd say no deeper than about 2 inches for shredded bark mulch. I'm not a big fan of the colored mulch. It doesn't hold as much moisture, but, you know, you can use it in a pinch.
Yeah. But it is tempting sometimes to pull the car over to the curb and jump out and run over to the lawn and pull
the mulch away.
Pull the mulch away from some of it. It's terrible. Oh, man. Norman, thank you for calling. Dwayne in River Falls, on to you. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple questions. One is about strawberries. We planted several strawberries and a couple of these vertical urn planters this spring, and about a month ago, and we were going to have strawberries for breakfast this morning, but the birds took them sometime last night.
Darn it.
So can I put a floating row crop cover over that?
Well, you can. I'm surprised that you're still getting berries at this time of year. Usually strawberries are all done by now. Are you up farther north?
River Falls.
Oh, River Falls. Well, sorry, yeah. I didn't catch that. Yeah, okay. Well, then you're right on time.
Yeah.
I was going, wow, down here in Madison, they've been gone for, you know, a month or so. But yeah, you could use floating row cover. The problem is that if you're now they're bearing, so are you still getting flowers?
It's mostly little small berries.
Okay.
I don't see flowers anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't have to worry about the pollination.
Right, exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that. You know, a better thing to do would be to use bird netting, if you can get some of that, because then that will allow the strawberries to still get the full amount of sun and rain. The thing I'd worry about with row cover at this point in time, if it's hot up there like it's going to be hot down here, is that's going to act like a greenhouse, and I wouldn't want you to fry your plants. So I guess my recommendation would be to go out to your local garden center. They usually carry bird netting, and you could also try maybe some like a Farm and Fleet type of, you know, farm supply store, and probably home improvement store garden centers would also carry that.
Did you say the damage happened after dark?
Well, it happened sometime since yesterday afternoon.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, if it happened after dark, it's not a bird. But,
no, it wouldn't be birds.
But it might be like a raccoon or something, but bird netting hopefully would help deter them.
Anything,
as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good luck, Duane. Thank you so much for calling. Amy, I want to go back to you again. We talked earlier about the program that's coming up, and probably worth mentioning it again because I'm sure people come and go and during the course of the show. So can you just sort of give us a quick review again of this Master Gardening Foundations in Gardening course?
Yeah, Larry, happy to. So the full long course title is Growing and Caring for Plants in Wisconsin, Foundations in Gardening. And the course title kind of tells you everything that's in it. So you're going to learn foundational topics. It's a comprehensive gardening course, so you're gonna take away from the course great important gardening concepts for growing and caring for plants in Wisconsin, including strategies for managing pests, how to try and prevent plant problems, and how to generally plan for gardening success. And this course is open to everyone in the members of the public who want to learn how to garden better, longer time gardeners who want to brush up or want to learn deeper. It's open to everyone, but it is also, if someone wants to become a Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener, this course is the first step because it is an approved learning opportunity, and that is step one of the process to become a Wisconsin Extension Master Gardener.
And to find out more, there's some costs associated with it, but it's something that I think is reasonable, certainly. But how do people find out more about all the specifics of it?
You can visit our website. So our big website is the Wisconsin Horticulture website, which is hort.extension.wisc.edu. And under upcoming programs, you'll see the course listed there. You can click on it. We've got all the information, including dates, registration dates. The early bird registration period is happening right now, so you can hop on, learn more, and register today if you wish for $299. And August 15th, rates go up. And if you have any questions, you can also email me at gardening.class@extension.wisc.edu.
And we'll have the websites and that posted up on my page today. So if you go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, you will get that information as well. Wanted to be sure to bring that up again. Ann in Racine, though, has a question about moisture and plants and soil. Ann, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We took out a burning bush. It was right next to the house. And then we noticed that we started getting dampness on our basement wall where that bush had been. So I'd like to put something there, a bush that doesn't get too tall so it interferes with the gutter, something that feeds me and the birds would be really nice. And I was recommended a beauty berry. And what can you tell me about that? And would it hold the moisture in the soil with the roots and not let it disperse towards the wall of the basement like the burning bush did?
Yeah, I've got to say I'm not an expert in home home moisture matters. What I can tell you about the beauty bush, it's kind of marginally hardy in the Madison area, but you're in
Racine,
so I think it should be fine for you. They're really beautiful plants. Now, they do tend to die back sometimes a bit during winter. Also, if you have heavy deer pressure, I can tell you the deer are rather fond of them, as well as rabbits. So they will prune them back for you. But you did want to prune them back over winter because they bloom and fruit on new wood, and they will get really big if you don't cut them back. So it's not such a bad thing that you maybe get a little bit of predator or herbivore feeding over the winter. But beautiful kind of not magenta, but orchid purple berries, a very nice display. There's a cultivar Isai. There's also one I think that's called Early Profusion. They're nice plants for sure.
And they're right next to the house, so you're not, you know, you're less likely to lose
so
them.
Much predator or herbivore
and also
damage.
Not in terms of damage, winter damage.
One thing though is that any new shrub is going to need a fair amount of water, especially this year. So you may find that because the root system isn't as developed, that you may still have moisture issues, and maybe you want to move that plant, I don't know, a little farther away, or perhaps have somebody who's a professional come look at that moisture issue in your basement.
Yeah. You know, it could be that if there was a hole or a depression left by taking it out, the water would pool right there.
Yeah.
I had a water issue when I first moved into the house and extended the downspout out another 2 feet, and it all went away. All the problem went away in just that quick. And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Becca in Bayside, your turn. Hi, Becca.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Good. I have a two-pronged question. One is, I have an organic vegetable garden that is taken over by what I think is perennial tomatoes. I mean, I know it's perennial tomatoes. It happened last year, too, and I didn't even know tomatoes were perennials. And so that's okay because it's a lot of tomatoes for me, but I'm wondering how many years I can expect that to go on. And then second, related to that, the garden is now seemingly being overtaken by wild onion. And that I'm not so happy about. I know how it happened. I had the onions a couple years ago, and I let them go to seed, and now I'm kicking myself. So what can I do about that, if anything? Do I need to, like, kill the whole thing off and start over? And again, it is organic. So any advice you have would be appreciated.
Okay. Let's start with the onions first. Those are fairly easy to pull because of the, you know, bulbous root system. So I would probably invest some time in doing that, and also making sure, of course, that you don't in the future let your onions go to seed. I don't know how well it would respond to, like, you know, covering and smothering. I think you'd probably be better off just pulling those if at all possible. And with the tomatoes, what you're seeing is the seeds sometimes survive over the winter. Each individual plant does not. So you're probably had some that maybe a few seeds fell to the ground. You can certainly pull those up, you know, when they come up in the spring if you don't want them. And often they turn out being hybrid of some kind. maybe not as good as what you were expecting. Even though tomatoes are mostly self-pollinated, you can have crossing happen. And usually if you grow something from seed in a non-controlled environment, it's going to be something that's not a variety that you want.
And I'm from experience, I can tell you, Becca, if you, even a half hour, you'd be amazed. You go out and pull for a half hour. You can pull a heck of a lot of wild onions in a half hour.
I've used like a potato fork to, you know, help loosen up the soil. That can really be helpful.
Yeah. Appreciate your call, Becca. Thank you very much for calling. Well, we had a couple more emails that I wanted to touch on. Let's see here. Grilled beets.
More beets.
Bill wanted to know if I put them on whole. You know, you could even take canned beets if you don't have beets ready. Well, you just want a can of beets in a sort of a water solution, not in a vinegar type solution. And you can cut them in half or whatever and throw them on. You can put a little oil on top of them and grill them that way. And they get really sweet. They get really, really sweet. And they are so, so good. I love those beets. And where can Badger Flame beets be found? Grant wanted to know. And I think they're just coming up now with... seeds. They don't have there's not enough yet.
Maybe they don't have a distributor yet, or they haven't produced enough yet.
Yeah, so I think it's probably, but maybe by next year, there'll be seeds out there. But you might shoot Irwin Goldman an email and ask him if he's got some.
Now we all want it
because they're beautiful. They really, really look gorgeous, and I'm eager to taste them. Let's see. Well, here we are out of time. Lisa, Amy, thank you both so much for taking time to be with us today, and hopefully we can do this again down the road. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it very much. Thank you both.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
So, Amy Freidig is a statewide horticulture outreach specialist, and she is helping oversee and kind of in charge of the new Master Gardener program, which is called Foundations in Gardening. And you can take it online. Go to my page. Go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and you'll get links to join up for that. And I know you're going to learn an awful lot. Coming up on Monday, we'll look at the Highland Games. And also, we'll take a look at the Apostle Islands, what they're doing there to help those with disabilities. I'm Larry Mueller. Have a great weekend, but stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.